And welcome to The Dividing Line on a Tuesday afternoon. James White along with you. And today we're supposed to be having a discussion on Molinism. And if the gentleman who had the exchange with me a little over a week ago, a name of Rich Porter, would like to call 877-753-3341, we'd be happy to have him on and have that conversation as we had had discussed. I certainly am prepared to engage in that conversation. I think it would be useful and helpful to folks. And so we'll just watch that phone line and hope that happens pretty soon here. Meanwhile, while Mr. Porter is dialing us up there, it is a toll-free number. A number of interesting articles that I have encountered. There's one that just, I don't know. Ben Witherington, fairly well-known Protestant scholar, obviously a good bit to the left of me, but still, posted an article, and the article says, Timothy George on the Churches of Rome. So my gut feeling is that this is a quotation. It just isn't formatted to show it as such, but at the end of the whole thing, it says, Timothy George is Dean of Beeson Divinity School of Stanford University and General Editor of the Reformation Commentary on Scripture, which is what caught my attention here. So I'm going to assume, just based upon what's here on Witherington's blog, which is on Patheos, which says something, I'm not going to read the whole thing. But if you take the time to look at it, it is just a gushing discussion of George Weigel's beautiful new book, Roman Pilgrimage, The Station Churches. And Witherington, I think, included this picture in the series he did. You know, it starts off, it says, I am not a Roman Catholic, but I love the churches of Rome. And it just goes through this, and when Witherington, I'm sorry if I'm misremembering this, but my recollection is that Witherington had had a opportunity of meeting the Pope and talked so highly of the experience and so on and so forth. And it just makes me feel really creepy when someone who is the general editor of the Reformation Commentary on Scripture, do you really think that the Reformers would have written blog articles about how pretty Rome's churches were? I mean, evidently, anymore, to look at, you know, when I was in Rome, briefly, I blogged about it, and oh, I offended people right out of their socks. I really did. You're going to have to let me know, by the way, if anyone calls. Because I, for some reason, we've got net issues again, and I can't see the phones anymore. So, I can't control them, can't see them, and I don't know why. But every once in a while, that seems to happen, and I don't know why. Anyway, I offended everybody because I talked about how gaudy, and that's not G-O-D, it's G-A-W-D, how gaudy and just repulsive everything that I saw there was. Just thinking about the money. You know, looking up and seeing the Petrine promise, knowing the abuse of that historically up in the rotunda there, St. Peter's and the gold, and just thinking about the sale of indulgences that helped pay to build this place. I mean, it was paid for by heresy and the abuse of people. Do forgive me for putting the gospel first, but That's what I did, and oh, people were just so offended. I just can't believe you can look at Michelangelo and be thinking about gospel things. Okay. I can understand why a lot of people would be confused by that. But that's what I did. And today, when I see people playing footsie with Rome, and I never hear them talking about the papacy. I never hear them talking about the blasphemy of claiming to be the Holy Father, the Vicar of Christ, an Alter Christus. I never hear him saying anything about that. I don't hear him talking about the blasphemy of purgatory, the blasphemy of transubstantiation and a propitiatory sacrifice that never perfects anybody. Never hear him talking about any of that stuff. Nope. But they'll talk all about how pretty it is in Rome. And I just go, how's the water out there in the middle of the Tiber these days? It was green last time I was there. Did not look like a river that I would want to be paddling around in. But man, there's a lot of people paddling around in it today. When you really start thinking about how many people today are Protestants of conviction, they have a firm conviction that Rome does not possess the gospel of Jesus Christ, and that Rome fundamentally presents a system that needs to be evangelized, needs to hear the gospel. If you really believe that, you are a small minority. Small minority. Oh, there's lots of people that detest Rome. I run into anti-Catholic bigots all the time. They just don't like Catholics. Like, there's people that don't like Jews, and there's people that don't like this, that, or the other thing. But real Protestants of conviction, small numbers, very, very small numbers. And so if this does represent Timothy George's view, I'm just sort of like, great, lovely. How strange that is. Still waiting for Richard Porter to give us a call, 877-753-3341. We were straightforward in letting him know when it would be, 6 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, Tuesday. Yep, phone line's working. I did not expect this. I really expected to have a nice conversation on, I once he calls, I'm assuming he'll still call. I would like to ask him to define some terms, and I think we could get some, some clarity on issues, and we'll see. But so far, no phone call, and I'm sorry for that, because I really would like to talk with him, but we'll see if he's just been delayed. It's possible. I mean, you didn't have a flat tire, for that matter. And if you don't have the number on your cell phone, or everybody has, well, I was going to say everybody has a cell phone now, but then I realized I started thinking about Don Fry. And actually, I think he has one. I actually think that when he goes out, he has one. Yeah, it's this big. Hello, Lucy. Yeah, that's... I think he'd be more comfortable with that. He does not want a smartphone, I can assure you of that. Anyway, we'll keep hoping that Mr. Porter will give us a call here in just a few moments. A number of you saw, well, actually probably almost nobody did, but Ergen Canner selected as camp pastor by Westside Baptist in Gainesville, Florida for summer youth retreat. And they use graphic adult TV show as theme. Well, I looked at the graphics, and there's no question they are playing off of Game of Thrones, which I've never seen. The only reason I know anything about Game of Thrones at all is I was watching some Honest Trailers. Ever seen Honest Trailers? Oh, Honest Trailers are normally hilarious. Sometimes they can get a little off color, but it is funny to watch Honest Trailers of movies you've actually seen. They're not nearly as funny when you actually haven't seen the movie. And I forget which one I had seen. But then at the end, you know, it always has all these things you can click on to see something else. And so I had heard about this Game of Thrones. I didn't know anything about it, so I clicked on it, and I'm like, really? This is an HBO series? Honestly? You can actually watch this? And it's pornographic, incestuous, it's just everything. It's certainly not something that a Christian would want to voluntarily expose themselves to. And so this is for youth, 6th through 12th grade. And you're going to use even the letters and the graphics from what is clearly an anti-Christian. Now, I'm hoping that what they'll do, obviously, is say, well, who's on the throne of your life? Okay, I get it, but do you really have to go that direction? But, of course, the problem, obviously, is you're asking Ergen Kanner to be camp pastor in the first place. And, you know, I understand so many of these folks just don't know. They don't check things out. The idea of protecting the pulpit, protecting the sheep, just not all that big in a lot of churches. I, you know, we can count on, I think, one hand. Might require us another finger now. The number of people who've preached from the pulpit of the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church in the past 15, 20 years. We are very, very careful about that. And I think that's a good thing in comparison to the, hey, come on in, anybody, you think you'll bring some more people? Come on in, the perspective that seems to be so prevalent amongst many churches as far as that goes. And so I understand, and you know, these folks at this church, I doubt very much that they have... they've watched my presentation on Ergen Kanner, that they've looked at any of the information. I get it. I understand. There's a naivete amongst many evangelicals. It's, hey, as long as somebody says, I love Jesus, you just believe in everything they have to say. And that's why you have so many charlatans running around making a mint off the sheep. Because the shepherds don't keep an eye out for things. And again, a lot of the shepherds don't know, unfortunately. But to combine the problems with Ergen Kanner, his lies, his unrepentant attitude about those lies, and his unrepentance toward suing Christian brothers, thankfully losing both of those lawsuits, the second in truly fantastic fashion. I'm still thinking back over the words that judge used. And you can't slap anybody down any harder than that, I don't think, without really getting specific. But does it ever cross anybody's mind? What if one of these youth does some, what? Oh, okay. I thought you were letting me know that there was a phone call, or there's no phone call? No. What if these youth, after the thing's over, go online, as youth are wont to do, and look up Ergen Kanner? I'm going to do that right now. Let's say I'm going to, well, actually, let me go to Google here.
Actually, while you're doing that, my thought was, what if one of the youth does this before?
Yeah.
Is this one of those youth retreats that's out in the middle of nowhere? How many kids will be on the early buses coming back?
Well, let's see. The first three are Kanner's sites, or Wikipedia, or Twitter. Fourth one is Right Wing Watch, and their report on Kanner losing one of his lawsuits. The fifth one is me. Thoughts on Ergen Kanner, cyber terrorist LU's leadership. So one of the recent dividing lines. Liberty Student News, Ergen Kanner guilty, removed as dean from seminary. Aaron Kanter topics Christianity Today. Aaron Kanter goes on Twitter rage, pronouncing himself innocent. One of my blog articles. Then you've got, in defense of Aaron Kanter, a response to his critics from fake ex-Muslims. Then unveiling Islam, and then the bottom page is simply Alpha and Omega Ministries, alphaandomega.org. And in the images on the right, you've got Aaron Kanter images. And at the bottom, first person up, yours truly. Next to me is Norman Geisler, which could not make Norm very happy. And then John Ankerberg. So me next to two of the architects of the great evangelical cover-up. There you go. So it wouldn't take too much. And if they really wanted to dig deep, and you know when someone's desperate for information, they click the second page of Google. University demotes Kanter. Story about Kanter leading Bruton Parker. Aaron Kanter and the integrity of Baptist institutions. Etc., etc., etc. Then we've got... Then we've got Aaron Kanter, the Lance Armstrong of evangelical Christianity. Whoa! That's from FBC Jack's Watchdog. I hadn't seen that one. That's funny. The Lance Armstrong of evangelical Christianity. Okay. And then finally, Jason gets on there with two on the second page in regards to his loss. So there's all sorts of stuff that you're going to find. And, you know, I just wonder if the pastor, you know, these kids look this up and they come back to the pastor and go, so, pastor, did you know about this stuff? And they might go, well, you know, we heard, you know, but it's a good old boy network. It's a good old boy network. That's the problem. And it's a shame. So Westside Baptist in Gainesville, you know, I don't have any information demonstrating that the leadership really has any knowledge whatsoever of Aaron Kanter. But at this point in time, how could you not? I mean, what are you going to do? Do you not do a quick Google search on somebody? You just trust what everybody has to say? I don't know. My daughter posted something here. It says... Look what is most often searched for. Aaron Kanter controversy, Aaron Kanter Twitter, Aaron Kanter James White, and Aaron Kanter exposed. That's just got to drive him nuts. But that's true. Yep. Thank you. My daughter's listening in. Still no, I saw you on the phone there. You were just talking to somebody else? Somebody else. Okay. Mr. Porter... Calling Richard Porter. We arranged to do something today, and I'm hoping that you'll, you know, if you're not gonna do it, Mr. Porter, would you at least have the kindness to tweet me or something and say ain't gonna do it?
Would it be improper for me to maybe suggest that he might have called a show in an alternate?
No, you mean no, a different mind. Possible world?
Yeah.
That's feasible. We need to use proper terminology.
Oh, okay.
It'd be a different feasible world.
So it would be proper, but it might not be feasible. Or would be feasible, but not necessarily proper? Just asking.
Yeah, well, and we wanted some clarity on that. So, and that's anyway. All right,
with a counterfactual. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Might as well go ahead and mention this. News came out over the weekend and late last week, I think, about, shall we say, the exercise of presidential privilege at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in regards to, in essence, the... suspension of the requirements for entrance into Southwestern on the part of the president of Southwestern so as to allow students at Southwestern who are not Christians. Specifically, a Muslim and two Mormons. Now, when Dr. Patterson was asked about this, specifically in regards to the Muslim doctoral student in archaeology, his response was that he agreed to follow the moral code of the seminary. You know, eat, drink, that kind of stuff. That's nice. I'm glad to hear that. And I know that Mormons would do the same thing, and they can be very moral and things like that. I don't know. I just find it incredibly ironic that I would be persona non grata on the campus of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. But you can have Mormons and Muslims there as students. I wouldn't be allowed to teach there, but they're allowed to enroll in the program there. Even though, according to the bylaws and stuff, and obviously what's causing a lot of people a problem, and I can understand this, is the Southern Baptist seminaries are supported by cooperative program giving. And hence, the reason that it's less expensive, significantly less expensive, for a member of a Southern Baptist church to attend a Southern Baptist seminary is because their tuition is being, in essence, underwritten by all Southern Baptists, by the Southern Baptist Convention as a whole. And so the seminaries do not have to budget based upon how much money they can just get out of the students. There's a certain amount of money coming in from the cooperative program and from the Southern Baptist Convention, and so that lowers the cost requirements for the students, which would also include the Muslim and the two Mormons. And so there are a lot of people going, I don't know that I give my money to the cooperative program to help educate Mormon students at Southwestern. Now, of course, the first thought across my mind as soon as I heard this was, now you've heard of evangelism dating. Now we have evangelism education. And so we're trying to convert Mormons and Muslims by allowing them to attend our institutions of higher learning in the hopes, I would assume, of such a clear presentation of the gospel that that there is an opportunity for their salvation, in essence. So there has been quite the brouhaha concerning this, especially in light of the fact that the entrance requirements are rather clear. There really isn't any question about it. I mean, you have to profess Jesus Christ as Lord, and no Muslim can do that. And if you think a Mormon is doing that when they are polytheists and believe that Jesus is the offspring of Elohim with one of his heavenly wives, no, that doesn't cut it either. So, obviously a developing story. And it would be very interesting to know if there are any other seminaries that would have non-Christian, specifically practice people who are practicing a religion other than Christianity, which you all have heard this before, but I would say that the Muslim is closer to the truth of Christianity than the Mormons are. I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to give Mr. Porter a few more minutes here. In case he's just delayed or, you know, there's a car pulling into the parking lot right now. Maybe, who knows, we could have an in-studio guest. There's two of them now pulling into the parking lot all at the same time. I'm going to give Mr. Porter a few more minutes, and what I will do is I'm going to review some comments by Glenn Beck this morning, and if we don't have anything there, we'll just have to forget about it and maybe hopefully reschedule for the future, and then we can take some calls toward the end. So how's that sound? Sound like a plan? Okay. One of our channel regulars mentioned that this morning on the Glenn Beck show that Mr. Beck got somewhat angry at folks like myself. He didn't mention me, but I certainly fall into the category here. It was interesting because as we listen to this, Glenn Beck, who is often a critic of progressives and the modern media and things like that, utilizes all the same false arguments that the progressives, liberals, and modern media use to demonize those that they don't like, which is rather interesting. But he started talking about his, week before last, I think. The week before last? Is that when I played the video of him speaking at Liberty? I think it was week before last. Well, evidently, I wasn't the only one who has referred to those things. So let's listen in to what he had to say here, and I'd like to make a few comments on his comments.
Hey, in completely unrelated news, Liberty University is being smeared, absolutely smeared, and they're being smeared by religious people, so people who claim to be followers of Christ. Now, I've read the Bible several times, and I just can't find the place where Jesus hates.
Isn't the hate accusation the most single commonly used argument from the left? Where when someone, I disagree that a Christian university should have a non-Christian speaking and allowing him to say we share the same faith in the sense that I believe in the atonement and no, you don't. Oh, I believe in an atonement. Okay, but that's not believing in the atonement. It's not the Christian atonement. It's not an atonement begun in the Garden of Gethsemane and only completed on the cross. Then you've got Brigham Young's doctrine of blood atonement. Don't think so. Don't think so. We're talking about a polytheist here who is given the opportunity of addressing the students and making claims concerning... Now, people say, well, there's good folks at Liberty. I'm sure that they talk to every single student at Liberty. Really? Really? There's someone who stood up after Glenn Beck and said, I'd like to point out the problems of what Glenn Beck said theologically? I don't think so. Not when he gives $50,000 to the university. That's not what happened.
Well, the other point I made in a conversation afterwards that I had on Facebook with a former Liberty student.
You can have conversations on Facebook?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Big time. Lots, let's just say, long-winded ones, at least on his part. He's like, hey, they talked to us ahead of time. We were all very prepared. We all know that Mormonism is a cult. But you just...
They talked to us ahead of time? What is that supposed to mean?
That I don't know. There were so many things he said that I didn't know what it was supposed to mean, including the comment, if you guys actually spent any time at Liberty, you'd know what's really going on and what we're really like, and you'd know we're okay.
Yeah, I'm invited there all the time.
And my point to him was, then why last time did he get a standing ovation, and what's with all these people who were applauding him this last time? I believe he did say something to the effect of, I have a word from God for you.
Mm.
Really?
Yeah. I hear you. I guess we're having some video issues today. They scored everybody in the chat channel. Feed's dead. Stopped again. Frozen in a funny position. Etc. Is that us? YouTube's not happy with us at the moment. I've been noticing that my screen in here keeps fading out.
Yeah, YouTube's trying to recover here. We're resetting and we're coming right back. It's like you called it a Skype pickup the other day.
Just a little bit longer than normal.
Yeah. Type. Well, the thing is, there is a bandwidth we feed out on, and if that bandwidth closes up, then we may lose the portion of the recovery and the bandwidth that's up there. So they may actually only lose a few seconds where we you know, show a little bit more. And there it goes again. Lovely. This could be fine. Well, let's see here. According to me, though, according to the audio feed is going just fine. So this is a YouTube thing.
Okay. All right. Well,
so keep chunking away.
I will do my best to ignore the chat channel and all the people whining and complaining as if we had something, there was something we could do about it. Yeah, we're in charge of YouTube. We control Google. Yeah. Anyway, someone in channel says, I think we just slipped into a counterfactual yet feasible world where the dividing line never existed. Ah, Molinistic humor. There's just no end. Talk about ad nauseum. There's a good use of a Latin phrase. Yeah, you get sick of it after a while. Ad nauseum. Okay, anyway, we continue on with Glenn Becker.
I can't find that where he is not embracing people. Oh, I can't find the place.
Where he's not embracing people. Can't find, maybe Matthew chapter 23? Yeah, I think that I'd like to direct you to Matthew chapter 23. Unless you're not really saying that Jesus just embraces everybody. Because that's not even what Mormonism teaches, Glenn.
The place where he says you'll know a tree by the fruit. I just can't find that.
Really? That's a direct quote of Jesus, that you'll know them by their fruit. Yeah, that's a direct quote, Glenn. See, this is what happens when you're confused by reading the Book of Mormon, which was written by someone who didn't really know the Bible all that well. Okay.
Anywhere.
I would refer you to the Westboro Baptist Church for their statement on the matter.
Now, there you go. You see, if you want to, you know, I'm used to this kind of attack from pro-homosexual progressives, but here you've got the Glenn Beck boys doing the hater Westboro Baptist thing. Isn't that weird? Isn't that strange? When you don't really have an argument whether you're on the right or the left, you do the same thing.
Thank you. Liberty University, because I went out and I spoke at Liberty University a few weeks ago, Liberty University asked me to speak, and every time they do, they get hammered by the Christian right, the so-called Christian right. Most Christians are not like this at all. But there's this group of people that have a problem with David Barton and me and everything else, and I don't really care. I really don't care. You say about me, please, stand in line. You want to say something? You're rookies. You're rookies.
Well, that's nice. I'm sure that Glenn Beck is used to getting a lot of heat. But does that mean that all criticism is inappropriate criticism? How is that a response to the fact that Mormonism is a fundamentally non-Christian belief? Despite the borrowing of our terminology in light of its redefinition of all the terminology. How is that a response? It isn't. It is not a response at all.
But, you know, when you take on an organization like Liberty University, I think you really should really think things through. Liberty University is one of the greatest universities in the world.
Well, maybe one of the largest, and there's some good folks there. But let's be honest, how it handled the Ergen Canner situation is appalling. It was pure politics, absolutely pure politics. And Liberty has to take a large portion of responsibility for the current situation with Ergen Canner, because of the fact that they did not handle this in a properly Christian fashion. They covered themselves, they covered their institution, they didn't do what was right as far as dealing with someone who had deceived students, deceived parents. There were students who came to Liberty Seminary who were misled as to what kind of education they would be receiving from whom. And I think they recognized that and recognized that they could not really be honest about it. Or it would cost too much. Let's just put it that way. So you can talk about that all you want, Glenn, but the reality is there's some real problems there. But again, that's not the issue. The issue is if you put a person who thinks they're a Christian in front of that audience as they give $50,000 to the university and then let them, in essence, preach with tears, don't tell me that you are not in some way, shape, or form helping to promote in the minds of the students a diminishment of what they should have, and that is a great concern for the matters of the gospel and the true worship of God and things like that. Don't tell me you're not diminishing that. You are. There's no question about it. There's no question about it.
It is certainly, certainly one of the top three universities. It's, in fact, one of only two universities I would consider sending my children to because I know they will get a deep understanding of God. Now, how could Glenn Beck say that he would send his child to Liberty University? He's a Mormon. Yeah. You know what? That's not pronounced moron. That's pronounced Mormon. And because of that, I don't think my children are morons. Do you think your children are morons? If you send your children to Liberty University, are they so stupid that they can't hear a speech by a guy who says, look, the leader of my church died for what he believed in?
Of course, Glenn, as we pointed out, you didn't tell the whole story. You didn't tell the story of Joseph Smith fighting back. You called it a martyrdom. That was the problem. Now, I doubt that Glenn Beck listened to anything I have to say, obviously. But those of us in the right wing, as he described us haters, actually have a meaningful and important criticism to lay at the representation of Joseph Smith. His murder was wrong. But don't call him a martyr. And don't say he was innocent. You know, Danites and things associated with that, he was not an innocent man. There were all sorts of things he did that were completely out of character for a Christian prophet. And, of course, how many wives did he have by then? Had something to do with it as well. So let's be very direct. And no one's, but beyond that, I would never let my kids go to BYU. Even if they could get in, I wouldn't send them to BYU. I don't care what kind of reputation a school might have or how good the degree might be. As a parent, you are the moron if you send your child into that kind of a situation. You're the moron because you are going to be needlessly exposing them to developing friendships that could very much cause them to compromise their faith and to make bad decisions. So, you know, maybe modern day Mormonism goes, hey, send your kids anywhere. It doesn't matter, you know. Go ahead and send them to a religious school. But then again, I don't find Glenn Beck to be the most orthodox or knowledgeable Mormon either. So, who knows?
The people who were in my church in the 1800s lost family members, lost homes, lost everything. In fact, lost their country, had to leave the country. I challenge you. Do you know your faith so well you can not only defend it, but you're willing to die for it?
Be very careful. The early Mormons were deceived by evil men. Joseph Smith was a fraud. And what you're saying is it's good to be willing to suffer for a lie. Because that's what they did. And at this point, they may have had some knowledge of what they believed, but that was a continuing developing story, shall we say, that would not reach, well, it's still continuing to this day, I suppose. I've always found it interesting to read the Pratt brothers. Orson and Parley P. Pratt. Great names. Great names in early Mormon history. The Pratt brothers. Won't run into too many Mormons that believe a lot of the things they believed these days. But the process was ongoing, just as the first vision story was developing over time and so on and so forth. But there's everything right in saying you need to know what you believe, but if Glenn Beck really knew what he believed, then he would know that his participation with the apostate churches of Christendom would be utterly inappropriate. As he says, he's read the Bible many times. No, okay. I've read the Book of Mormon many times, and I seem to recall something rather clearly stated in there in reference to the concept of there are only two churches, the Church of the Lamb, the Church of the Devil. And I know how that is interpreted within Mormonism and how the Mormon leadership has interpreted that phrase as well. I just have to wonder if Glenn Beck knows that. That is, I think, a good question.
Yeah, that's a problem because you weren't talking about, you know, what he taught even. You were talking about the fact that he died for what he believed in.
Challenging.
Yeah.
Challenging. Now, if your kids are...
Excuse me, when you talk someone, when you talk about someone as a martyr, you call him a prophet. Don't you think that communicates something? I think it does. I think it does.
Are so moronic. I guarantee you that your kids will not be able to even get in to Liberty University if they're that stupid. They got it. And I don't apologize for who I am. I don't apologize for my faith. I don't apologize to anyone.
Well, it'd be nice if you would engage in apologetics. Where is... Been a while since I dug this out. It opened up on its own to the first book of Nephi. Wow, this thing is... You know, how could you even hold this thing open? I mean, this is too heavy to hold up. That it is just ridiculously heavy. This is a full size quad, as Glenn Beck would recognize. It is big. And just off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember. And unfortunately, I don't have my marked one here. I couldn't probably read it anymore anyways, which is a sad commentary. I found it. Look at that. You know? Did that for so many years, you can still remember where it is. Doctrine and Covenants, section 71, verse 7. DNC 71:7. Wherefore, confound your enemies, call upon them to meet you both in public and in private, and inasmuch as ye are faithful, their shame shall be made manifest. Wherefore, let them bring forth their strong reasons against the Lord. Verily, thus saith the Lord unto you, there is no weapon that is formed against you shall prosper, and if any man lift his voice against you, he shall be confounded in mine own due time. Wherefore, keep my commandments, they are true and faithful, even so, amen. A revelation given to Joseph Smith, the prophet, and Sidney Rigdon, which in of itself is somewhat ironic, at Hiram, Ohio, December 1st, 1831. And I've pointed this text out to a number of Mormons, especially in the modern context, where you have the new friendly Mormonists. You have the new Mormonism that doesn't make nearly the kind of claims that it once did. And Algo just asked, were you holding your quad when you got hit in the back with an Arby's roast beef sandwich? You know, Algo's getting a little old, just
that's
like me.
Way too familiar.
No. Let's think about it. First of all, I was not. I carried a little pocket-sized triple along with the Bible back then. But what's more is, as I've described this, I saw the roast beef sandwich heading for me. To this day, I can still see it tumbling in the air, end over end, as it came up over the crowd. There's these kids I'm talking to, and then all of a sudden, here's this thing growing bigger and bigger and bigger, and it hits me in the chest, not in the back. Hits me in the chest and falls on the ground. And I mentioned that we saw it sort of smashed into the sidewalk for a couple days after that. But I saw it coming at me. And so it couldn't have been in the back, and I'm a little disappointed in Brother Algo, because what he's confusing with, what he's conflating it with, was the kid who came up behind me once with one of those ices, and he had packed it together real tight, so it was, and then hit me in the back of the head with that. That's what he is conflating. Anyway, easily distracted by the chat channel there. In the modern Mormonism, that doesn't make the kind of claims that historical Mormonism did, and even the Mormonism of my younger days, and there are still Mormons who do, but they're getting frustrated with the marshmallow leadership of the Mormon Church anymore. There was that many Mormons in the early history of the church. Look it up in the documentary History of the Church. Don't take my words for it. Look it up in the DHC for yourself. I get the feeling that's not quite as widely read a resource as it once was, you know. Look it up in the DHC. Many of the Mormon missionaries sent out, especially into the East and to United Kingdom, would seek to arrange debates. They wanted to have public debates in those early days. It was not something that they eschewed. It was not something that they avoided. It was something they wanted. Very unusual for Mormons today to have that kind of a mindset. Mormonism is changing. It really seems to have lost its way, lost its character. It was easier for me to respect a Mormon who knew their beliefs and was just a wild-eyed heretic than many of the modern Mormons who, to be perfectly honest with you, are just much more postmodern, marshmallowy type people than the old, good old Mormons that would stand in my face and be like Elder Hollywood. Yes, Elder Hollywood. I've told the story before, I know, but it was, what, about the second or third year that we were out there in Mesa, I think, somewhere around there. And this tall, he was over 6 foot tall, Mormon missionary. Corner one, the main corner we were on there at Main and Hobson in Mesa. The Arby's was still there. Now it's a parking lot. And there was this kid was a believer. He was a little strange one because his name wasn't Hollywood. He was a very flamboyant missionary. And he really got into it with me and did not realize that his voice is getting louder and louder and louder. And people are starting to look over at him, and he's getting quite agitated. And all I'm doing, of course, is quoting from Isaiah and pointing these things out. And finally, I just will never, ever forget. He gets right in my face. I mean, he's definitely invading my private space. And he's got his finger up, and he's going, and with a loud, clear voice. And sometimes what would happen is, I'm assuming it was during, yeah, it was during the pageant itself. And there would be times when the pageant makes a lot of noise. And then there are times when it gets very quiet. And this was one of those quiet times. So there was nothing to match him. And he sticks his finger in my face. He's looking down at me. And he says, "Someday I'm going to be a god and you are going to worship me." And it's like it echoed. And it's like one of those videos where you've got all these people. You know, this sort of freeze. You know, they hear something. What was the old commercials? When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. Yes, when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. Well, when Elder Hollywood yelled, people were frozen in place, you know. And he sort of looked around and realized what he had just done. Because there were a lot of Mormons sitting there going, "Oh, really?" And so he sort of backed off, and I think some other missionaries came over and sort of, and we ended up having a good conversation the next night later on. But that's the way they were back then. Now, ironically, it was, what, about 10 years later? Or was it over 10 years later? I think it was a little bit over a decade later. I ran into him at the South Gate, across from the shopping center there. What was that called? Crossroads? Crossroads Mall. And he wasn't a Mormon anymore. He wasn't sure what he was anymore. It was sad. But because, well, sad, and I suppose that could be a point in his journey to the truth or something. I don't know. But it's sad for me when I see someone who's just part of the religiously abused and they're just left out there. But anyway, those types of Mormons that were saying, "I'm going to be a god," and I can deal with that. I can talk with someone like that. It's the modern Mormons that are just sort of ishy, squishy, so on and so forth that I have a hard time dealing with. So we're still having issues, huh? Oh, it looks like you just cleared up.
But this will be the first time I've actually had to go into the YouTube feed and actually put the audio link in the description so that people can hear the whole show. Because, yeah, YouTube missed about half of that so far. But the audio recording's excellent, so we got all of the audio.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, is anybody happening to be sitting online?
They're waiting for you to say open phones and they'll call.
Yeah, but we've only got 5 minutes, so that's sort of ridiculous to do that. But if someone wants to try, I suppose we can do something quick. If we want to do something quick.
I can screen them fast.
We can do that. 877-753-3341, 877-753-3341. Again, what we'll do while Rich gets your calls is as to Mr. Porter. I did not receive any information from him that he was unwilling to be on the program. And the last we had, you know, I did earlier today to try to find, try to tweet to him, make sure, hey, you're going to be on? And he didn't ever respond to me. Or at least if he did, I didn't. Let me see here real quick. Because I would think that would come up in the other window I had open, but sometimes I'm wrong about these things. But I saw a tweet from him that said something about my engaging in character assassination by posting what I posted, and I just responded, "I quoted you. How can that be character assassination?" So Maybe that was his way of saying, I'm not coming on. I don't know. But hopefully I'll let you know what happens, because I'd still like to have that conversation. But if he doesn't, he doesn't. That's life. Okay, let me see here. All right, which one's first? All right, let's talk to Andrew real quick. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, is this James White?
Yes, it is.
Hello, sir. My name is Andrew. As you heard, I'm a big fan, and I've been immensely blessed by your work. The place where my heart lies when it comes to ministry and where I kind of devoted myself extensively is the Free Grace Lordship debate, which I heard you, and I've heard your Wilkins debate many, many times.
Yes.
I'm just curious. Do you think that, and this is a very, I guess you could say, poignant question, but would you say that the combination of verses of 1 Corinthians 16:22, where it says, if anybody love not the Lord your God, let him be anathema, and the combination of the verse and that verse along with John 14:15, if you love me, you will obey my commandments, even though I know they're not in the same context, because they display two congruent ideas. Could that be used within that context?
In the sense of providing, I think, a proper biblical warning that making obedience to Christ's commands a optional thing for super Christians, rather than something that is the result of the very work of the Spirit of God within our hearts, so that, as the writer of Hebrews says, the holiness without which no one will see the Lord.
Yeah, I heard your sermon on that.
Yeah, in that sense, not I wouldn't use it in the sense of a debate, but in the sense that we demonstrate our love for the Lord in that way, that there needs to be a desire in the heart in that way. I think that's appropriate. But I wouldn't use it as a gotcha argument in that sense.
Makes sense. And one last other question that's slightly more, not so much exegetical or debate, just more of an insight. Would you say that even though many people aren't free grace by conviction, there are many people that are practically free grace, you know, just people that, you know, would never in a million years call somebody out as false brethren? Do you think that that has contributed to, you know, the very, just the allowance of heresy into the church? I think that movement has given those people who would never call somebody out as a false brethren, I think this has given them theological grounds to not call them out.
Well, it really goes the other direction. I think the free grace movement is the result of that general degradation in commitment to the gospel and a concern for the truth of the gospel, and even a belief there is a truth of the gospel. It opens up the room and the space for the acceptance of that kind of teaching. So I don't think it's that the free grace movement results in this. I think it's the other way around. I think it resulted from that degradation over time of commitment to a sound biblical gospel and the elements that are so reprehensible to the natural man, specifically the wrath of God, the fact that God has a purpose in the redemption of his people, and that is to conform them to the image of Christ, and so on and so forth. So I would actually see the relationship reversed at that point. But there's lots of reasons why this is arisen. I think especially in Western culture, it's just part of God's judgment upon Western culture. A sound, discerning church is a blessing upon a nation, and this nation certainly is not in any position to be demanding any blessings. So
right.
All right.
Definitely. All right. I appreciate it, Dr. White.
Okay.
And you have blessed me so much, and I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right. God bless. All right. Did you still there? All right. One more real quick. We'll go over time in a few minutes. Let's talk with Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Dr. White. Just a quick question. You'll have to forgive me because I don't read Greek. For the very reason you said a little Greek is a dangerous thing, I got rid of my concordance, but so I can't really substantiate it. In John 3:16, where it said, "Whosoever believeth should not," in the King James, or "shall not," is that a subjunctive clause?
Yeah, it's a henot clause.
Okay, because my question is, I've listened to Kerrigan Scully for a while just because, you know, it keeps my blood boiling, but when I heard you do a review of his...
May I suggest running, rowing, or cycling would be better ways of doing that, really, honestly.
Point taken. But when I was listening to you review his video, I just had the thought, if he's really consistent with his, you know, use, or should I say abuse of, you know, subjunctive or henot clauses, wouldn't he have to apply that to John 3:16 and actually say that, well, there are going to be people that do believe in Christ but go to hell anyways? Wouldn't he have to do that?
Well, and he does, because he believes that you can believe and truly believe and then fall away. So
that text doesn't say anything about falling away. At least to me, that text is communicating the belief in Christ, and there's no talking about, you know, the possibility of falling away. It just says those who believe, you know, shall not perish. So
I'm not defending his false understanding, but I think he would agree that my understanding of his position is that the reason it's in the subjunctive is that there can be people who truly believe but stop believing, and hence the subjunctive here in his understanding. This is where he's completely wrong about the subjunctive, but at least back then, you know, who knows whether he'll change his views now or accept correction. I have no idea. He hasn't, to my knowledge, responded to anything I've said so far. But my understanding is that what his perspective is that everyone believing, if they continue believing, will have eternal life. But not everyone's going to continue believing. Therefore, that's why the subjunctive is there. That's wrong. Well, that's not how it's functioning. But I have a feeling that's what he would have said anyways at that particular point.
Well, I can understand at least him trying to make that argument. But I guess I'm not really good at articulating this part. But it seems to me that if he is correct or whatever, if his use of the subjunctive is correct, that text could only be used to say that people can truly believe and still go to hell anyways, not in the sense of falling away, but while believing, because the text itself doesn't. It's kind of like the whole golden chain of redemption. One precedes, or one just immediately follows the other.
Well, you might want to ask him. Maybe he'll respond. I don't know. He hasn't responded to me. I can guarantee you. They know that I've done it. Hey, thanks for your phone call today, sir.
I was just
looking at some of the stuff in the chat channel, including someone saying, "Dr. White, what is your opinion on Kanye and Kim's wedding?" I'm glad he didn't call in, because I'd have to hang up on him. Anyway, thanks for listening to Divine Line. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Have no idea where that came from, but blame it on YouTube. Sorry that we didn't get into Molinism. We thought we were going to. We were ready to. But we'll see what happened there, and maybe we'll blog and let you know if it's going to happen sometime in the future. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. God bless.